football on Off The Ball.
So when you look at Kerry Football Club now and where we are, these are things that we've battled through for many, many years. These are obstacles that we've been willing to jump and willing to fight on through.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Final One Standing by William Hill on Off The Ball. Download the app and play today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
Welcome along. It is Final One Standing. You've got a room of three people at the moment where we're not standing in the OTB group. I believe Mick McCarthy is the only person left within OTB currently. So he's already planning what to do with the charity donation. He won the league last season as well. So Mick has got form. Unfortunately, Kathleen McNamee doesn't, because she didn't get her prediction in time for the first round. How are you, Kathleen?
I'm all right.
That's how you ended up posting last week. I think that's how it felt to me as well.
Yeah.
I didn't get it in, so I had to watch all the others fall at the first and second hurdles, a little bit like David Wilson, who went on week two.
Yes, week two, Sunderland got me against Burnley. Burnley were 3-0 winners. I don't know, I took a punt on Sunderland after the first week.
I was going to say, it was very early days for Sunderland. Surely you cycled through Man City, you know, Liverpool, Chelsea, well, Arsenal.
I was thinking long term to try and be like, oh, yeah, no, I'll keep those teams for later on. And I think I said it before here last week. I was like, the very first week, I was like, I fancy Sunderland to do well this year. And then I bottled it and picked Liverpool right at the last minute. And Liverpool obviously beat Bournemouth that week. Sunderland beat West Ham. And then I was like, right, I'll go Sunderland this week. And they let me down.
You just picked the wrong week. I was on to Jonathan Wilson, Sunderland fan, during the week. And he's hopeful that they might be able to stay up. 8 points on the board after a month. He thinks that's a better return than they expected. But they've got a difficult run of games coming now.
Yeah,
I'm surprised you went for them. Was your tactic at the time, let's go for whoever Burnley are playing?
Yes, it was, because I thought Burnley were going to be falling like a stone. They've proved me wrong, though. But Sunderland did spend like 130 or 40 million. They're like the sixth or seventh highest spend in the Premier League ahead of the transfer window closing. So they have invested a lot of money. So I think it looks like the three promoted teams as well this season are at least changing their style of play to try and compete with the teams that have more quality and to try and kind of be a bit more defensively solid rather than what we've seen the last couple of seasons.
Change of play across the league this year. We've never had a Premier League season with fewer passes at this stage. We've had more long throws this season than ever before. Brentford right up there. We'll talk about their game at Manchester United. 24 long throws, Kathleen. They've already launched into the box under Keith Andrews in their first five games.
What is the trend towards long throws this season?
Back.
Like, why is it coming back?
It's an effective weapon,
both at
Sunday League, Leinster Senior League level, and in the Premier League, it turns out.
But it just seems strange that all of a sudden it's become like the fashionable thing to do.
I think some of the analytical gurus have worked out that just getting the ball
into the mixer,
into the areas in front of the goal, kind of statistically more chance of scoring goals. Direct balls as well. I think like this generation of players, like I'm kind of would be towards the end, like I'm 28 now, so like we're like,
you almost whispered that into the mic. You're like,
I know, yeah,
head
I know.
Towards 30 or...
I know, yeah, it's really bad. But I suppose like a lot of that generation of players kind of grew up in that Guardiola era where you kind of play from the back, and it's all like, especially if you're a defensive player, like it's really important. And I think maybe these generation of players haven't maybe grown up in defending like long balls into the box, crosses, because the game had changed, obviously, when they were kind of learning the game. So I think that's maybe a reason why Arteta, Andrews, and everyone else using long throws into the box again.
So the trend that I think is going to change, Kathleen, is the teams will start to defend against this because they're going to now put time in at the training ground to do so. So Fulham last week against Brentford were good at neutralising it. And Marco Silva was asked afterwards. He said they did sessions which were just about defending the second ball during the week. He said it was very difficult because they couldn't replicate the long throw, but they were replicating long balls and balls into the box continually, and they made an active effort. So I think if you're playing Arsenal, if you're playing Brentford, you need to actually give a bit of extra time to that in training. And I think it's no coincidence the team who are the worst at getting corners and long throws into the box, West Ham, are also the worst team at defending them.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think Arsenal started this whole process of really focusing on set pieces a couple of seasons ago. So I'm not surprised that it's kind of elevated a little bit and changed over the last while, because teams did get very good at defending against the very specific set pieces that they had. I just find it funny because, like, when I think long throws, I just think of Megan Campbell and her world record.
Which is, again, one of very effective.
Very effective. But also, when I think I see them as such a, like, last ditch attempt almost. Like, I don't think of them as like a proper piece of tactical skill that you should use. It's, you know, in the same way that teams are now starting to use it. So I think it's probably my own brain that I need to rewire a little bit.
It's associated with the lower leagues. It's definitely associated with teams who come up, probably Tony Pulis, that type of stuff. You know, the idea of just getting it in, having a Delap who can throw it long. Now I think a lot of teams are looking at it, and teams who've got a very expensive squad, like Arsenal, use it quite a bit. And Arsenal don't just launch it into the box. They do that Odegaard one as well, where he runs down the line and they throw it as far as they possibly can because you can't be offside. Arsenal midweek, by the way, a little bit of history in their game of the EFL Cup. Any idea what it is? I've nicked this from the Athletics podcast, by the way.
No, I did watch the game, but I don't know what the...
It's the only game, I'll see if David can get it before I give it away, between two teams...
That are not from a geographical place.
Correct, not named after a place.
Yeah. Ah.
Port Vale and Arsenal. Yeah. Again, I think it's a total mystery as to why Port Vale are called Port Vale. It goes back to the days of yore. Obviously, the area they're from is not a port and it's not Vale.
Yeah.
How do you even work something like that out?
Yeah. Not too many teams. There's only two of them in the entire football league in England who aren't named after a place.
Yeah. I suppose, yeah. That probably helps.
A very unusual good win for Arsenal at week in the EFL Cup. We'll talk about their game against Newcastle.
I'd say it was a good win now.
Which is a tricky game for them on Sunday. But we do have that game live this Sunday on Off the Ball as well. We're going to have Vinnie Perth alongside the returning Stephen Doyle this week on commentary. And we've got Richie McCormack and Brian Kerr are going to be watching Aston Villa against Fulham. Villa having won their first game of the season against Bologna this week in the Europa League. And Fulham coming at the back of their derby win against Brentford as well. So, like, it's a decent game week, David, all in all, before we bring Lee Phelps in.
Yeah, like the Aston Villa Fulham game, I've just been looking into that as well. And the last Fulham win over Aston Villa was a 3-0 win at Craven Cottage. And it was Steven Gerrard's last game in charge of Villa.
Wow.
And the last Fulham win in Villa Park over Aston Villa was in 2014. It was back in April 2014. And the Fulham manager that day was a certain Felix Magath. It was his only away win as a Premier League manager for Fulham.
Wow. Okay. A man who lives beside Fulham Stadium and a former Aston Villa boss, Martin O'Neill, is going to be on tomorrow's Off the Ball as well. He's chatting to John about his new book. So he's going to be here tomorrow, a man that lives in West London. But Lee Phelps is with us now to look forward to this week. Lee, how are you keeping?
Yeah, really good, thank you. Looking forward to the weekend's football. After last weekend, it was tough call last weekend, but this one looks a little bit more...
These are where the banana skins kick in, Lee. And like, we have two people here who aren't in Final One standing in any of the groups that says they've been knocked out. So in the leagues that you're active in, are you still in any of them?
Yes, I am. I'm in the... We've got a staff one at William Hill, and there are 29 people left in that, and I'm still in there as well, which I'm pretty surprised about, to be honest. But and I've got Manchester City left, so I've got Man City against Burnley is my pick. I mean, as a betting proposition, you know, they're a very, very short price. Over 80% chance of winning this weekend, Man City, on our Final One Standing power rankings. So as a single, you wouldn't really want to be having that as a bet. But for Final One Standing, all you need is a win. So I'm happy to chuck them in there, Manchester City.
I think lump away. So 10 visits that Burnley have had to the Etihad in recent years, they've lost all 10. And it's aggregate 40 goals to 3.
Yeah, and you've got Haaland, who's like, obviously... I mean, I saw this amazing stat last week. Bearing in mind what a great start to the season he's had. I saw this stat that said this is his worst start to a Premier League season. I was like, what? But he's got 5 goals in 3 games against Burnley as well. He's got a hat-trick against him in the Cup last season. So I do like the hat-trick for Haaland in this game, because you get impact sub as well. So if he scores 2 when he goes off, the man coming on to replace him carries on your bet. So if he scores 2 and the sub scores 1, your hat trick gets paid out. So yeah, I do like that. I'm looking forward to the game, actually. It's interesting Saturday, isn't it? Because you've got Manchester City, you've got Chelsea, you've got Liverpool all playing in the 3 p.m. kickoffs.
Yeah, I think as well, when it comes to City this week as well, Lee, the fact that they rotated their team as heavily as they did midweek as well, you would assume that they're back to full strength for this one too.
Yeah, absolutely. And why, even if they, you know, they have to, I mean, look, it's getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. They're 2 up at half time or whatever, but like, then you can start to make changes midway through the second half. And that was my thinking. Just away from Final One Standing for a second, there's a player for Burnley called Florentino. If you're looking for bet builders over the weekend, then I think this might be one, because you're looking at midfielders having shots on target. You're looking at Haaland, of course. Florentino to make over 2 tackles would be going in there for me. Picked up a red card for Benfica against Fenerbahce in the Champions League this season before he moved to England. He got a yellow against Forest for Burnley, and he's made 7 tackles in 2 games so far. So I think he might have his hands full against Manchester City. So I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Florentino. It's just one of those bets that just stood out to me as I was looking through and prepping for the weekend. But yeah, Manchester City, there's over 50% of picks full stop across all the Final One standing leagues. So the original and the biggest, the €500,000 jackpot, we've got 16,000 there or thereabouts players left in there. Over 50% went last week, by the way, because it was such a tough week. But over 50% of players have still got Manchester City left. So we expect City to have a lot of picks. Tottenham are another team who've got a lot of people supporting them this week in Final One standing. A lot of the other big clubs have simply gone, I guess. So that's why. But yeah, Tottenham at home to Wolves. Wolves are struggling, obviously. They're, you know, second favourites for the relegation, so you'd expect Tottenham to win that one as well. So they're the two of the biggest picks of the weekend. And there's in your league, there are 16 people left. 16 people. Any of you guys still in there?
No, we're all out, but we got smarter listeners than us. That's why we're here. That's why they're in the YouTube comments hammering us for being wrong, and particularly being wrong about their teams as well. Like, David was just an early adopter, Lee, as it worked out. He went, I'm going against Burnley every week. He got caught out in week number 2 against Sunderland. 50% of players are going against him this week. If he was still here, happy days, he could just pick City now.
Yeah, absolutely. That would have been a very good tactic apart from that early blip, I guess. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because we're trying to you're looking at the journey through to this point, and some people have gone for the outsiders. Other people have just gone for the main. So my tactic was just go for the team that you think is going to win each week. Now, obviously, you're going to get to a stage where you're running out of teams. And last week, you know, I wasn't overly confident, you know, with my pick. I went for Fulham in the end, and it was fine, you know. But like, if I wasn't overly confident because I didn't have Liverpool left, and this is where it starts to get really interesting, you know. And I think the people who've been picking the, you know, the kind of lesser fancied teams will be sitting pretty at this stage, ready to go. Deadline 12:30 Saturday. Make sure you get your picks in. And obviously, if you've been in a game before and you've been knocked out and you're sat there thinking, I wish I could play, there's a new jackpot every week, so you can get involved in that. Same again, if you get knocked out this week, you can re-enter as soon as the 12:30 game kicks off. There'll be a new jackpot for next week, so there's always a chance to have a go on Final One Standing.
Are many of the Liverpool backers, like 5 wins from 5 so far, staying away from them this week? Because to me, this one stands out as a massive banana skin. Crystal Palace unbeaten in 17, already beat Liverpool this season in the Community Shields to give it its current title. Like, to me, this is one Selhurst Park. If I was a backer in Final One Standing, this is the week I'd probably stay away from Liverpool.
Yeah, and I think what's happened, there aren't that many picking them, but I think that's mainly because they've been picked now. I think most, you know, I think that's what we're finding, is that a lot of players have gone for the big clubs already. So you're starting to really whittle it down. So the weekly percentage of people who've picked Liverpool, 0.3% in the €500,000 game, that is. 0.3%. You know, that's obviously a tiny number. Again, mainly because, you know, they've already been picked, and a lot picked them last week. A lot picked them against Burnley, you remember, a couple of weeks ago. So they're done. I think Liverpool are pretty much done for most players. I was looking down the list, by the way, and you say about Palace, one person in the €500,000 game has picked Palace. One person has picked Wolves. One person has picked West Ham. I mean, who's picking West Ham at Everton, by the way? And one person has picked Brighton. So it's interesting how, you know, it's, like I said before, I think it's 24% have picked Tottenham, 57% have picked Manchester City. So if those, and 10% have picked Everton. So the vast majority of players are nailed the colours to the mast, and they're going Tottenham, Man City, Everton in that order. So if those three get through, we're pretty much as you were. If any one of those three slip up, then it could be really interesting.
Prove me wrong on Monday if I am wrong on this, but if that was me, one of those backers, unless they're a fan of those teams, I would just have a side bet on one of them to win. Wolves away from home, West Ham away from home in the form they're in. Yeah. Don't do it in Final One Standing. Pick a team who are actually going to win and then have your bet on the side.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You'll get some decent prices this weekend because of the heavy odds on favourites. I mean, you know, I said it's like an easier weekend. That means the traders are obviously a little bit worried. I mean, you had this strange situation last Saturday. Well, last week was a bit of a nightmare week, and I'm not expecting anyone to get violins out for us, but it was a bit of a nightmare week in terms of results last midweek. Then you get to the weekend, and both teams to score landed in every single Premier League game, didn't it, on the Saturday. This week, I mean, you know, with the likes of Aka Boost, and you've got some short price favourites in the Premier League on a 3 p.m. Saturday, I think the traders will be quite nervous about that. Going back to your point about Liverpool, I think Liverpool will get the job done. I think, you know, Crystal Palace have had a great start to the season. You know, they didn't beat Liverpool, remember, in the Community Shield. They drew with them. And I just think that when you look at Palace's home form, they've drawn with Sunderland and Forest, scoring one goal. I just think Isak will start, surely, with Ekitike banned after the Cup red card. Isak starts, you've got Salah, you've seen what the midfield's been like. They've just got so much attacking prowess, even though they're not at their best at the moment, Liverpool. I still think they'll just have a bit too much. Got a great record at Palace, despite, I think, the Istanbul defeat, you know, in that what would have been their title-winning season, you know, lives heavy on Liverpool fans' shoulders, but I think Liverpool will have a bit too much for them, so I think they'll beat Palace.
And just for you, goalie, how are you guys pricing up Newcastle and Arsenal then on Sunday? It's one of our live commentary games here in Off the Ball, and Arsenal obviously hoping to pick up all three after drawing against City last week.
Yeah, Newcastle at 12-5 at home, Arsenal 23-10 the draw, Arsenal 11-10 the draw, 23-10, so Arsenal are favourites. I thought, an interesting one, because I think it feels like that's priced up on Newcastle last season to me. And I know they've got, obviously they've got Valtamara and he's started really well, and you know, they've got some good players, but if this was Newcastle at full strength and they had Vissa, you know, match fit and in the team, and Valtamara and Gordon and everyone was firing, and I think that'd be fair enough. I think on paper Arsenal are a much better side than Newcastle. The big question mark is, will they go up there and try and win the game? If they go up there and try and win the game and attack them and put Eze on from the start in a central role for me, I think they win this game. I don't think there's any question about that. I think if we knew they were going to go and do that, they might not be 11-10. I think there might be a touch of odds on. But fascinating to see this Arsenal kind of journey this season develop and see when are they going to put, you know, really let the shackles off and just go and try and beat teams.
Good stuff, Lee. Enjoy the weekend.
And you, good luck to everyone in Final One Standing.
And of course, Final One Standing here and Off the Ball is brought to you by William Hill. You can download the app and play today. All over 18s, see gamblingcare.ie for more details there. Kathleen, will Arsenal play with the handbrake off at St James's Park?
I don't know. I found both games, between the City game and then also the one against Port Vale during the week, quite frustrating to watch, because I feel like they were playing with a bit of caution, and it had felt at the start of the season by the Liverpool game, which again was a bit of a different story, but like I think it felt like this team had actually decided for the first time in a long time to play with a lack of abandonment and enjoying their football, and things were starting to click, and there was new players coming in who were exciting, and you could see that, you know, it wasn't like all of a sudden we're just dependent on Saka, and if he gets injured all of a sudden the whole season is up in flames. But then I think like we've had a few injuries the last couple of weeks, and I can kind of feel that old Arsenal creeping in a little bit to the mentality. I mean, you said like a good win for them against Port Vale during the week, but like once that first goal went in, that should have been floodgates open.
Yeah.
Whack another couple in, and instead it was like 10 minutes before the end.
I would argue, by the way, there's no need for them to be as conservative as they are. So they've got really good defenders. They've got two elite defensive midfielders in Zubimendi and Rice sitting in front of the defence, protecting it as well. Surely it should be a case of the five players ahead of them are given every opportunity to just attack, attack, attack.
Yeah,
but first instinct forward seems to be, and particularly last week, and look, it was addressed a little bit by the two subs at half time. There was a conservative
even that,
first
you
approach.
You shouldn't need two subs at half time against Port Vale. The reason you should be bringing on two subs at half time is because you're 4-0 up and you're like, let's whack a few players on and give them an opportunity. Like, I just think it was so descriptive of why Arsenal will probably not win a Premier League title under Arteta if they keep playing like that.
David Wilson, Arsenal too conservative?
I think absolutely, like, too conservative. Like, the game last week against City, I felt like, because City were just like, okay, we scored after 10 minutes, Arsenal have the ball, come and break us down. We don't really believe that you have the tools to do so, especially, okay, they brought on Eze and Saka, which made a difference. But I think Arsenal need to be a lot more proactive. And this game on Sunday against Newcastle, is like the biggest test. Even I know like the City test obviously was a big one last week and they were all already played at Anfield. But this is a game that if you're going to win the title, you're going to have to win this game. And Newcastle have won three of the last four against Arsenal in St. James's Park. They beat them four times last season, beat them twice in the Carabao Cup semi-final as well. Newcastle have kind of had the Indian sign over Arsenal this last couple
of years.
Yeah,
Arsenal have a better record against City than they do against Newcastle.
Yeah, and Eddie Howe's first game in charge was actually against Newcastle, and they won that game. But like, this is a massive test of their title credentials, and if they'll go into this game, I think more than likely 8 points behind Liverpool, half four on Sunday, if Liverpool beat Palace tomorrow. Mm-hmm. 8 points after six games is already a big gap. So Arsenal, I think, have no other choice than to go for it and win this game.
Does 5 points already feel significant? So the last 2 5-point leads, one was converted into a title, one wasn't. Mm-hmm. So Liverpool's league title in 1920 was a 5-point lead at this stage after five games. And City in 15-16, when they didn't win the league, had this lead. So this is the third time in the last kind of 20 years this has happened. It's like it's an immaculate start from Liverpool. Does it put pressure on the teams who chase? Because some people were saying on the TV last week, it's too early to be looking at it. It has to be at least six or seven games in before you even look at the table. But when Liverpool are a point accumulating machine, you can't afford to fall too far behind them.
Yeah, and I also think if you look at Liverpool this season, it's not that they've been absolutely immaculate in the way that they've played. Like, they have had their issues at different points and they have leaked goals at different points, but they just have this incredible ability to win and to scrape through some of the games that they have played, which you don't see with teams like Arsenal or even any of the teams chasing. Like, if you look at the top five there, Arsenal, Spurs, Bournemouth, Crystal Palace, you can't look at those and think any of them are really going to put a challenge to Liverpool in terms of the squads that are there, apart from potentially Arsenal, depending on if they do stop playing as conservatively as they do. Obviously, Madueke now is out injured as well for, I think it's like 6 to 8 weeks with the knee injury, which isn't great either. So I think at this stage, with the squads that are there, 5 points definitely is, it feels not insurmountable, but it's like getting close to insurmountable.
That's a significant start. It really is. So Liverpool, David, when it comes to this game against Crystal Palace, so mentioned earlier on, 17 games unbeaten now for Palace. Really, really good. They play really well, I think, against the top teams as well. I do take the point about sometimes their home form can be perhaps a little bit more patchy than when they're away from home against big teams. But to me, this is one of the biggest tests that Liverpool have had all season.
Yeah, I definitely would agree with that. Like, they're unbeaten in the last 11 Premier League matches. It's the longest ongoing run of any team in the Premier League. They're looking to go 12 top five games unbeaten for just a second time. They've done that between May and October 1990. That was a good Palace team. They finished third in the first division that year. It's Mateta is up front. He's got 29 and 55 games for under Oliver Glasner. He will cause Liverpool problems. Liverpool have obviously Virgil van Dijk, obviously they have Joe Gomez in reserve, and they'll have Ibrahim Konate. But after the injury to Diego Leone during the week, and he's going to be out for a year, like, if something was to happen, if there was an injury or if there's a red card, like, Palace can really cause Liverpool problems tomorrow. Ismail Assar's got an excellent record. Now, he is a doubt for the game tomorrow. He has got an excellent record against Liverpool. And if anyone remembers the Liverpool season when they won the Premier League during COVID, or the COVID at the back end of that season, Ismail Assar scored a couple of goals for Watford at that time and they beat them 3-0. So Palace have lots of weapons that can really hurt Liverpool in Selhurst Park tomorrow. And I think, like, Adam Wharton is playing really well at the back of midfield. I think he could be one of the best kind of midfielders in the Premier League as well. Liverpool haven't clicked yet in midfield. Gravenberch has been excellent. Florian Wirtz hasn't kind of reproduced his Bayer Leverkusen form
so
just yet.
Was last week's midfield the best midfield, and maybe that means Wirtz goes to the left, particularly now that Ekitike is out, Isak could go through the middle. To me, it seems that they're more balanced when it's McAllister, Szoboszlai and Gravenberch, who started the season brilliantly, for them to be the middle three as opposed to trying to fit Wirtz in at the front of it.
Yeah, I think that's the best midfield three that Liverpool have had since Fabinho, Wijnaldum and Henderson. Although I think Alexis McAllister still isn't at the level that he was this last kind of season or so. He still seems to be kind of... Now, he's missed a bit of part of pre-season as well.
Maybe in the house, which kind of slowed things down a bit.
Yeah, I guess so. It's interesting to see, like, he kind of has been used fleetingly, buy Arne Slot so far. But I think like the worrying thing is, I think for Arsenal and for their other Premier League teams, is that Liverpool actually haven't found their groove yet. Yes, they're conceding a couple of goals, but the really worrying thing is that when they do click, when Ekitike comes back in, when Isak really finds his kind of rhythm in this new team, like they could romp this league title by Christmas, which is not the most exciting thing for me, but I think that could actually happen.
Yeah, as a neutral, I hope it doesn't. Ekitike's second yellow, utter stupidity. I would agree with Slot, where he said, if this is the Champions League final, you beat three players and you bang it in the top corner, take your shirt off and take the yellow card, no problem. This is the third round of the League Cup.
I know. What was going through his head? Like, did he just forget that he had a yellow card already?
Show off his name. That's all he was about.
Was that like a go back at like, oh, they started Isak ahead of me? Was that like, oh, don't forget about me, I'm only in the door? Was that what that was about?
Well, he's definitely not going to be forgotten about now, the wrong reasons.
Yeah, the goals he's already scored means I think everyone is very aware that he's incredibly available and ready to go. But even with Isak scoring, Isak still doesn't look fully sharp, so I think Ekitike would have probably started at 9 this weekend.
I just can't imagine in what world you decide to do that and get yourself sent off for something as stupid as taking off. Like, I already think it's stupid that you get yellow carded for taking off your jersey anyways. I think it's a stupid rule. But, like, why? What was going on in his head?
He loves the League Cup. That's what it's all about. He's like, Doug, give away your Champions Leagues and your leagues. I'm about the EFL Cup and we're into round 4. It was what Ekitike was thinking. Okay, I suppose
he
means
loves a rainy night.
He does. And this is going to be such a weird game for Mark A as well. Like, yeah. What could have been? If he was possibly less professional, he's probably playing against Crystal Palace.
Yeah, probably. But
he done everything kind of by the book and right.
Bangs in a goal literally the game before and goes, yeah. I've been the man here.
Yeah, and then they don't get the deal done. Obviously, there was kind of rumours that with Glasner leave, if Gahey was let go like right at the last second. If he does put on the red of Liverpool, like is that going to happen? Like Real Madrid are rumoured to be interested now this week. Could they steal him from under the noses of Liverpool?
I assume he's not going to sign a contract, so he will walk as a free agent next summer. And it all probably depends on where Kanate is this time next year as well. Yeah. He's been heavy linked with Real Madrid as well. Madrid love a free transfer. Don't be totally surprised if they bring in both of them, because their centre-backs are ageing at the moment. Mm. They could do with a couple of players in potentially. So
Steenhuisen hasn't started well there.
No, he hasn't. So that's Palace against Liverpool, 3 o'clock tomorrow. Brentford against Manchester United is the early kickoff, Kathleen. Manchester United lost 4-3 in this game last year. It was an absolute thriller. They haven't won away from home in the Premier League since March. And they haven't done two in a row under Ruben Amorim yet.
Yeah,
So all things point to Keith Andrews shaking his hand tomorrow and going, unlucky, buddy.
I mean, yeah, what can you say about United this season so far? What can you say about Amorim? It'd be great, I think, for Keith Andrews if he did manage to get the win over United. Like, no matter how far they fall as a team, I think it's still seen as a massive scalp, no matter what. I think that with this United team, I just don't know what the recipe is to get them back on their feet. I mean, I feel like every week I come on the show or one of the other off the ball shows and I say, like, surely they can't fall any further. And then they break some other record that they've never broken in their history before for losing. Brentford obviously had, like, a tough experience last weekend in that game. Looked like they were, like, got off on the right foot and then just crumbled a little bit. But I do think that this could be a really good win for them if they can play their cards right and if the Manchester United that we've seen over the last couple of weeks and months, potentially even seasons. Yeah, years. I was trying to be nice. I didn't want to, like, have our Manchester United listeners crying of a Friday evening, and save that for the early kickoff tomorrow.
David, give some optimism to Manchester United fans here. The guy looking for the haircut, he's only 4 away now at this stage.
He's only 4 away, but, like, United haven't won 5 games in a row, like, since 2023 or 4, I think is what he said in a TikTok during the week. I think that if you look back to the game against Chelsea last week, that was a complete anomaly. Like, the first 20 minutes of that game was like some sort of biblical rainfall that only Manchester seems to get. Like, United did start well. They were super intense in how they pressed. They got the ball launched, really, and they played off Šeško, and they got a bit of luck with the red card, which was definitely a red card for Robert Sanchez. I don't think you can read anything into that game, because United were 2-0 up and cruising, really, and then Casemiro gets like I can see why he's frustrated with the second yellow, but like, you just don't need to make that tackle.
They're two silly yellows.
Yeah, and again, then United obviously were kind of holding on. Now, it seems like the talk this week that Kobbie Mainoo has been training really well, and he's been in banging on Ruben Amorim's office door and saying
that means Ugarte is right.
Yeah, right. So I'm gonna play as a number six. So I think Ugarte probably starts tomorrow. Ugarte has not been like, it's been one of the worst £50 million signings that United have made, and United have made a few over the last couple of years. So whether Kobbie Mainoo does see game time tomorrow, like, I think from a fans' perspective, United fans would love to see him start, but there's no evidence, like, bar the first 15-20 minutes of a game against Chelsea, that United will win that game against Brentford at lunchtime on Saturday.
Yeah, I'd be sticking away from them if I was on Final One Standing. If you guys were picking a team this week, Kathleen, who would you pick?
Oh, that's a good question.
You can't pick Man City because everyone else has done that.
I mean, I kind of, after that discussion, want to go for Brentford just for the crack. I think...
I'll give mine away. I'd go for Spurs this week. I think Spurs beat Wolves. I know Wolves had a win midweek, but yeah. Spurs look solid and they look good at home.
Go Fulham.
Okay. You reckon Fulham are winning the Villa Park?
Yeah.
You don't think Villa have turned a corner after the Bologna result? Two goals scored in the last couple of games. Heady days for them.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not convinced. Maybe I've been listening to too much of Mick McCarthy.
I tried to give producer Mick an open door to talk about Villa on Monday, and he very promptly closed that door and went, no, let's talk about Arsenal against Man City. He didn't want to talk about Villa at all after the draw against Sunderland. Who would you pick, Dave?
I would agree with you and pick Spurs. I was really impressed with them after they conceded the two goals against Brighton last Saturday. Quite interestingly, I was watching on Premier Sports, and they're showing clips of the warm-up and stuff, which I always think is quite an interesting thing to do, especially when you're at the games. But Spurs are warming up like with defending set pieces, which isn't so common, but they were literally crossing balls into the box, like Romero and Van de Ven were all defending them, and they had the actual like first team coaches and like fitness staff and training staff or like the opposition players against them. So that shows you how much kind of work that Thomas Frank and his coaching staff are putting on the training ground and on even warm ups before games. Spurs have been really impressive, and Mohamed Kudus, I think, has been one of the best players, one of the best signings in the Premier League in the first five games so far. I fancy him to beat Wolves. Wolves have not been good. They look like they're going to struggle to score goals, and now they're leaking goals too. I still think Vitor Pereira will do a job and get them out of the bottom three.
He has a new contract.
I know Jurgen Strand Larsson also did sign a new contract as well. But Spurs have been impressed with Thomas Frank. They're a level on points with Arsenal, and kind of no one's really talking about them for a top four challenge.
Well, poor Eve was knocked out last week because she went for Spurs.
I can't believe she picked them going to Brighton, which is a graveyard for them.
Yeah. She did kind of say herself whenever we were on Final One Standing that she felt like she had made a mistake.
She got too excited too fast. She was watching the Traders and dressing up for the final of the Traders on Tuesday. Got too ahead of herself and went, a lump on Spurs in a game where you want Spurs, you wait for this week. Spurs and home to Wolves, and you pick them.
She didn't want to pick Spurs though this week because she's going to the game and she didn't want to jinx herself.
That's fair enough. She should see a good game, I think, tomorrow evening. That is the late kickoff. The 8 o'clock slot has become a long day. Premier League on a Saturday. So the games this weekend, then you've got Brentford against Man United lunchtime tomorrow. Chelsea against Brighton, Crystal Palace, Liverpool, which could be game of the weekend. Leeds versus Bournemouth, Man City against Burnley. You've got Nottingham Forest, Ange finally getting a home game. Started with three away games, just the way the fixtures fell, taking on Sunderland. You've got Spurs against Wolves, then the late game. And on Sunday, our two live games here on News Talk will be Aston Villa against Fulham, 2 o'clock, and a 4:30 kickoff for Newcastle against Arsenal. And then on Monday, to round off your weekend nicely, you've got West Ham, who basically their fans are just memeing Graham Potter at this season. That is the point they've got to with the season.
It is the best thing I've seen in a long time on Twitter.
Yeah, possibly don't share any of them on this show. But have a look yourself if you're on X, formerly known as Twitter. And West Ham, go to Everton's new stadium, as I will call it, for at least another 6 months for the 8 o'clock kickoff on Monday. That has been Final One Standing. My thanks to Kathleen and to David. We'll see you again next Friday.
The Final One Standing by William Hill on Off the Ball. Download the app and play today. 18 plus gamblingcare.ie.